Beyond Under with Bohdana Oneshchuk.
Hi everybody, it's Beyond and Under with Bohdana Oneshchuk. Finally you hear from me, just like I promised a long time ago. And today we start with chapter 6 of our book. And you're gonna listen about so many things that I've experienced and that really evoked interest in me, and I really want that you hear about this. And in this episode, in chapter six, we will talk about 2 years of the war, of the Russo-Ukrainian war, and we're gonna talk about national identity. This is a very, very important topic for me, and I think that it should be heard. And it's not just about the facts, it's not just about reality, but it also about how much it changes, how much it's this realization about these things, the, so to say, the digestion of these things changes our concept and our attitude in so many other aspects. And 2 years of the war. On 24th of February 2024, it was exactly 2 years from the point when the war, Russo-Ukrainian war, started. And I want to talk about this a little bit more. I want to present to you all these things that are in these words and everything that these words mean. And it's not just about, it is the war, and the war is happening in many countries. Yes, that's true. But also it's about different aspect of this. And after that, I wanna share with you about national identity, and more specific about transgenerational trauma, which is the very a crucial thing that happened and that led to so many sufferings of the nation, of Ukraine, of Ukrainians as a nation. And I want to talk about this because this is part of me. This is part of this book, because this book is you and me. And it is part of me. This history is part of me. This war is part of me. This national identity is part of me. It's not just something that is separately from me. And I am just looking at everything from a witness point of view. No, I am the part of it. I experienced that, but also I have a third in position about this. It's not that everybody has this position, and I wanna share with you this position, and I want this, my position and my thought, be the part of this book, the part of the book that you're listening right now. On 24th February 2022, Russia invaded Ukraine in an escalation. And listen, I want to emphasize here, what does it mean, escalation? Because the meaning that we put into the word is very important. And escalation means a situation in which something becomes greater or more serious. So Russia invaded Ukraine in an escalation of the Russo-Ukrainian war that started in 2014. In 2014 was annexation of Crimea, and later on east part of Ukraine. And the invasion became the largest attack on European country since World War II. Just think about it. Can you imagine that? It's the largest attack. The largest attack. So the casualty that we have, the situation that it caused, everything around this and in this is the largest attack on a European country since World War II. Yeah, it's really hard when you think about this. World War II, it was terrible. It was, you know, it was terrible. It was, so to say, many years ago, but at the same time, it still has its its fingerprints on our lives, on many generations before us. So we should pay attention. We should pay attention to the meanings that we put into words and comprehend the meaning of these words. So listen, the largest attack since World War II. I always do this. I just read the words one more time carefully and slowly. And I try to really, so to say, materialize all these words, the largest. And I imagine really the largest, the superlative, the largest. It's not the larger. It's not just, you know, big. It's the largest. And I'm just visualizing all these words, the largest attack. So attack somebody or something attacks another thing. So it's the largest attack on a European country since World War II. Yes, the reality is so. Listen, the reality is so people who never experienced the war are not able to fully comprehend what is happening there. And by this, I don't say that, you know, they are to blame or they are so something because they have not this experience. I think that's great that all people didn't have this experience. That would be terrible if all people went through the war. No. I'm not trying to blame somebody because they don't know something or because they cannot fully sympathize somebody else who came through certain experience because they didn't. I'm not the person who's blaming somebody. And under no circumstances, I want to blame somebody that people that have not experienced war and have not experienced all the consequences of this, have not experienced this change, this drastic change in their life. I don't want to blame them. I'm really happy that didn't, but there is also some things about, you know, about ignorance, about you know, about something that is really beyond any normal human being, just emotion. And yeah, so under no circumstances I am blaming anybody that didn't come through certain experiences. I'm not trying to say this, but I'm saying that the person who never experienced the war, not able to fully comprehend. Partly, sure. Partly, you are able to comprehend a lot of things, but considering the fact that you have not directly had that experience. Partly, you can comprehend. We are all different, and the capacity of our comprehension is different. Of our emotions, of our heart is different. So it's really not about that I'm blaming somebody or that I'm saying, listen, you are not able to comprehend. Nobody is able to comprehend this experience that I came through or the experience that many, many other people came through. And yeah, that would be really, really stupid, I think. That's my opinion. And yeah, but I want to tell you this. What is the reality? I just want you to listen to all these words and really try to imagine them, because visualizing certain things creates a certain reality, a certain temporary reality for us. And I will tell you the reality. Bombs, air raid alerts, destruction of homes and families, horrible loss. Listen, everybody lost somebody. This is true. Everybody lost somebody. It's somebody. Somebody lost the father, the brother, the mother, the sister, the uncle, the aunt, the so many other things. You know, I'm really at loss right now because, you know, all these words. But everybody lost somebody, and yeah, so horrible loss. It's horrible loss when you can lose your home, and yeah, it's terrible. But then you can find another home, maybe if you work on this and if you really try to heal, you will find another home. But if you lost a person, it's harder. I don't say it's impossible, because it's possible, but it's so hard to heal from that. It's so hard to heal from that. And in order that you understand really clearly what I mean, imagine a family member that you have, and one day they're not there anymore. Your husband, your wife, your sister, your brother, your child. Imagine your grandfather, your grandmother. Imagine they are one day, you receive the message they died. They are not there anymore. And it's not like you've prepared for that. It's never like this. It's never like this was any death, but this is a horrible loss. It is. I compare it to one part of your heart being rudely, being savagely teared from your heart. One part of your heart just taken away from your heart, and then the rest of your heart is falling apart because you can't. But that, of course, you need time to heal and all that stuff, and it happens. But this is the reality of war. Horrible loss. Everybody lost somebody. Injuries, amputations, an unbelievable amount of people with disabilities. And you know, sometimes the society, or not even society, but the environment is not prepared for that. They are simply not prepared for that, to see so many people on the streets, to see how they struggle, to see that, oh wow, we are not a really suitable atmosphere. We don't have all the facilities for them. And this is really, you want to just cry walking around the streets. So yeah, an unbelievable amount of people with disabilities, tense and unstable economic environment. Sometimes we are really, you know, sometimes I am really positive about this, and I know that it's not that bad. The economic environment I'm talking about my country right now, in Ukraine, is not that bad. Because I want to stay positive, because you don't have any other choice. I don't have any other choice. I can face the truth, you know, face the music. I can do that. And I can admit that, yes, it's really demolished. The economics is not good. It ain't looking good at all. But still, I can say, wow, some businesses are opening, this happening. So it's not that the situation is looking up. It's not that bad. And, you know, you start to have this positive mindset. And I think with this positive mindset, of course, this unstable and tense economic situation environment will sooner or later become better. But now it's not. And I don't want to focus on negative part. I want to focus on the reality. And I'm just talking with you, and some of the statements I'm reading. So horrible loss, injuries, amputations, an unbelievable amount of people with disabilities, tense and unstable economic environment, orphans, so many kids, they lost their parents or whoever they had. They lost it. No more parents. It's really sad. They are kids. They really want to have their childhood, but now they have traumas instead. Soldiers and civilians in captivity being raped, tortured, and starved to death. This is fully different story, and I think it's a separate story. It's a separate topic for discussion, because this is very serious. You can't even imagine, but I can't even imagine. It's not about you. I can't even imagine. And so many other people, Ukrainians who are right now, that the war is happening, and they live in Ukraine. They are, you know, experiencing all this things, and we can't even imagine. We can't even imagine how many people are in captivity. Women, pregnant women, men, soldiers, kids. And they are raped. They are tortured. They are starved to death. They are not allowed to talk Ukrainian, because if you talk you speak Ukrainian, you're gonna have another round of tortures. How does that sound? Or something about, listen, the person who's overseeing you, you are in captivity, and the person who's overseeing you says, listen, I want to have sex. Yeah. And it doesn't really matter you are a man or a woman or a child. I don't want to talk about this. I'm not ready to talk about this because my heart aches whenever I, especially, you know, in this picture of so many things, of so many reality of the war. And I can't. This specific topic about so many people, soldiers, civilians, in all different categories of people are there in captivity. And what are being made with them? What is happening with them? All the terrible thing that you can ever imagine. So yeah, this topic is very sensitive for me personally. And they are starved. They are also starved to death. And there are also many other things, but they are simply too painful and bitter to fit on the paper. I really think so. Too painful, too bitter to fit on the paper. Even the last one about captivity, I can't. I was doubting whether I should or not even mention that. Because when I mention that, I have this, my heart aches. My heart aches, and this is my reaction. I can't help to feel what I feel. I wanna go on about another thing that happened in the terms of Russo-Ukrainian war. Ukraine rejected Pope Francis' call to raise the white flag. Listen, raise the white flag and hold negotiations with Russia, saying that Kyiv will never surrender. Our flag is a yellow and blue one. This is the flag by which we'll live, die, and prevail. We shall never raise any other flags. Ukraine's foreign minister Dmytro Kuleba wrote on social media. That's I think that's a decent answer to Pope Francis' call to raise the white flag. Raise the white flag. Or in my opinion and my thought, how I feel that, how I see that, and how I understand this very subtle attack is raise the white flag, or one more attempt to suppress Ukraine, one more attempt to imprison Ukraine, one more attempt to shut down Ukrainian voices, one more attempt to starve Ukraine to death, one more attempt to violently rob them of their history and identity, of my history, of our history and identity. Religion has long been a place for political propaganda. That's not something new. So no wonder that such a statement came out. I'm not surprised that such statement came out, but such a statement is a mixture of the pro-Moscow scheme. Let's act as if it's them who started the hell with blood and death and many other things, like broken into small pieces, economics, and hearts of adults and children who suffered a horrible loss. I talk quite often about economics, because this is how we live. This is the price that we have, the houses that we live, the rent that we pay, and what create the atmosphere of the country. This is logically that I speak about it. And of course, I cannot not mention the broken hearts of people, the broken destinies and lives and careers, bright futures, and so many other things. And I just want to share a little bit more that, you know, I mentioned that that it's such a pro-Moscow scheme and pro-Moscow statement to raise the white flag. And listen, I want you to listen to me and understand what I really mean. It's not just unreasonable sentences and statements that I give here. I don't like to put my anger without no facts and no statements just because this has happened. And who started, what was the reason, what are the consequences. I don't really do this, so that's why I prepared quite a research about history, and I really love Ukrainian history, and that's why I decided that it's really nice to have the chapter of our book dedicated to this, because this is the part of me, and I can't help but to talk about identity, about history, about Ukrainian, about culture, and about my passions as well. It's not just political things, but also individual growth and development as well. And I really wish that everybody, each of you will find a response inside of them for whatever I'm sharing here, whatever I'm preparing, whatever I'm working for. And listen, I just it's a small note from me. It's not about being perfect, because from the very beginning, I wanted to create something perfect. I wanted to create a really nice podcast. I wanted to create a nice radio program, and I wanted to shine. I wanted to share with people. I wanted to have so many people that really admire and listen to my program. But sometimes it's not like this. And in the process, it's really interesting how the process was. I started with one idea, but you know, it was not working out, and I decided to really flow as I am and to be as I am, and start talking about literature, writing, Ukrainian, and now about history. And we will keep talking about all this thing together. And I really hope that all that together makes sense for you, because I like logic. I like structure of things. It's not just randomly talking about something. And if you feel like this is about randomly talking about something, then please be patient with me. I'm getting better. I'm learning just like everybody. Yeah. Now talking about white flag, raise the white flag. And from the nonsensical lies of Moscovia, Ukraine, from, you know, there are a list of lies that Moscovia, the Russia, I call it Moscow, Russia, created. There is, among all these lies, there is one that really is the, so to say, the reason why it's all started. Because the war didn't start in 2014, believe me, it started in 16th century. And now I'm going to prove you why, and I'm going to share with you why. And from their words and from their lies, Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia are three brotherly nations. Listen, three brotherly nations. They very Russia very often use this expression, three brotherly nations, and use the expression that they are elderly brother. Yeah, so Moscovia actually created this, Russia created this, created this phrases. They are not true. Listen, they are not true from historical point of view, from factual point of view. They are not true. Ukraine, Belarus, and Russia are not three brotherly nations. And Russia, under no circumstances, is the elderly brother. And I will tell you why. So the Russia made the world, the whole world, believe in this foolish, unreasonable lie. Kyivska Rus, maybe you've heard about it, maybe you've heard Kievan Rus, Kyivska Rus, or Kyiv Rus, which later became the foundation for the state of Ukraine, was formed, attention here, in 882. Whereas the Moscow state, later became Russian Empire, was formed in 1547. So you can do the math. So the Kievska Rus was formed 882. You can write that down. 882. So no Moscow, no Moscow region, no Russia, nothing. And then Russia, Moscow state, later became Russian Empire, was formed in 16th century, 1547. And had nothing to do with Kievska Rus until 1547, because Moscow was formed and ruled by the Golden Horde. And so Russian nation is descendant of Mongolo-Tatars, of Golden Horde, and also mixture of Mongolo-Tatars and the mixture of Finnish ethnic group that was located at the territories of Russia before the Golden Horde came. So, Moscow state had nothing to do with Kievska Rus until 16th century, and even after 16th century, it was not that they had something to do, you know, suddenly. It was not that. It was that they decided to steal the history of Ukraine. I will go on. And so Moscow state was formed and ruled. It was created as a region of Golden Horde, because Golden Horde came and they created Moscow state. And Moscow, the city Moscow, was formed by Golden Horde as well in 16th century. Before that, there was nothing like Russia. Like, Russia was later, but nothing like Moscow. And so, yes, Russian nation, I really want to be heard here. Russian nation is descendant of Mongolo-Tatars and Finnish ethnic group that located at the territories of Russia before the Golden Horde came. So the Moscow and later Russian tsars realized. So tsars were the person who were ruling Moscow state and later Russian empire. So they realized that without a great past, it was impossible to create a great nation, a great empire. Yeah, so they decided to steal it. So to do this, they had to embellish their historical past and even appropriate someone else's. Therefore, the Moscow Tsars started with Ivan the Fourth, that was ruling Moscow state from 1533 to 1584, and the first Moscow Tsar, and they set out to appropriate, to steal the history of Kievska Rus, its glorious past, and create the official mythology of the Russian Empire. So if you ever hear that Russia and Ukraine and Belarusia are three brotherly nations, and that the Russia has the right for Ukraine, historically has the right for Ukraine, this is the lie that they made you believe in. So they created, so to say, a mythology. The mythology of Russian Empire, of their great and glorious history, had to do with Kievska Rus. In fact, it had not. In fact, it had not. And they didn't have their own history, their own glorious past. So they decided to steal the past and the history of Kievska Rus, and to propagate this, to create this mythology. Official, listen, it's official mythology. It's not just, you know, random mythology. It's official mythology that I'm pretty sure that everyone from Russia will tell you that Kievska Rus, it's Russian. Russian is steamed from Kievska Rus, which is not true. For centuries, especially since the beginning of the 16th century, it has been drummed into people's heads that the Russian state and the Russian people originate from the Grand Duchy of Kiev. that Kyivska Rus is the cradle, listen, is the cradle of three brotherly nations, Russia, Russian, Ukrainian, and Belarusian, that Russian by the law of elder brotherhood, listen to this nonsense, by the law of elder brotherhood. How come that the elder brotherhood was born more than 600 years later after Kyivska Rus was formed? Because as I mentioned already, I'm going to mention it many times because I want you to get the main point here. Kyivska Rus formed 882. It's three numbers. 882. Moscow state, not Russian Empire, just Moscow region that was under the Golden Horde was formed in 1847. So middle of 16th century. So how come that they are elder brotherhood? It's just such a mere lie, such a, I would say, arrogant lie and rude lie that they are drumming into people's heads. And I mean, into all the world, because I'm pretty sure that so many people think that, you know, Ukraine is not a independent country, and how come they don't want to be with Russia together? They have such a similar language and history. Oh, wait, we don't have a similar language. We don't have a similar history. And yeah, about language, I don't want to start on language today, but I want to start on history today, which I did already. I started. And so they, as by the law of elder brotherhood, as they think, have the right to the heritage of Kyivska Rus. No. This pathetic lie is still used by Russian historiography and Russian statesmen. It means that in school, in Russian school, this lie is taught. So with all this history that actually led us to where we are now, then national identity comes into the game, because actually this is where it began. It didn't start in 2014 with Crimea, because suddenly we need Crimea, we need Ukrainian Crimea. It didn't start back then. It started in 16th century when they started to the politics of stealing, of appropriating the history of Kyivska Rus to themselves, because they thought, as I already mentioned, they thought we cannot create a powerful imperia without a very beautiful history, without glorious past. We cannot. So let's steal. Yes, and then, of course, national identity comes into the game. The nation that has been for centuries tortured and persecuted for its language, culture, and history, and imposed undesired, strange, and foreign language, culture, and history develops a reflex, reaction, and trauma that flows through generations and reaches us. And what I'm talking about right now is that from 16th century, Russia started this politics of imposing their language, history, culture, banning in any case, in any forms, Ukrainian history, language, and culture. And started from 16th century, later on, through centuries, up to 20th century, they were creating the laws that Ukrainian would be closer to Russian language. So they would say, no more this letter, because this is a very unique letter for Ukrainian alphabet and we don't have this letter. So no, don't use this letter. Or let's say we're not going to use this Ukrainian words. Instead, we're going to use very close, according to the sound, closely related Russian words. And that's what happened. That's what happened. And when the people are tortured for centuries, persecuted for its language, culture, of course, later on, they have a reflex, they have trauma, they have reaction that flows through generation and reaches us. reaches us as a nation. So over time, generations forget their language. They forget their culture and history because somewhere deep down they want to avoid the sufferings that their ancestors died from. Throughout the centuries, we had this phenomena that people who, for example, the Ukrainian writers, Ukrainian historians, they would be taken into captivity, into Russian captivity. They would not be allowed to speak Ukrainian, to write Ukrainian, to do anything with Ukrainian, and they would be sent away to Sibir. It's a very far away, far-fetched part of Russia, to Sibir, and they would work there in the camps and then die there. Because they were starved, or they would just be too weak because of the hard work, and that's all. And that's how in 60s and in 30s in the beginning and middle and later on in the 20th century we lost so many talented people that were created in our history, our literature heritage. We lost them because they were sent away to Sibir because they were writing in Ukrainian, they were following Ukrainian history, they were publishing a certain articles about real history of Ukraine and Russia and not imposed one. So they were sent away or they were killed. Sent away is the better scenario. It's the better scenario for them. Killed is the best punishment from Russian government was to kill. There is no person, no problem. That is their motto. No person, no problem. You can really look into the news and throughout the years, and some diplomats or some politician in Russia that were going against the wave, against the authority of one person, they disappeared because they were killed. No person, no problem. That is their motto for so many centuries. That is what they did with so many Ukrainians as well. And of course, after all these sufferings and all these deaths and all these difficulties, of course, the deep down, the next generations, deep down, they forget, they are imposed something, and they forget, and then they want to avoid the sufferings that their ancestors died from. And this is called transgenerational trauma. And that is partly, not fully, partly that's why so many people in Ukraine speak Russian. And the war that Russia started many centuries ago, 16th century, remember, will not end up profitable for them at all. Because now we are reuniting. We are reunited with our national identity. Ukrainians are reuniting with their national identity. We are remembering our roots. We are awakening. We are fighting. And according to me, and I'm pretty sure according to many other people, national identity is a crucial key to a strong nation. That is what we are doing now. Of course, I know you can contradict me by giving me some examples of economically developed and strong countries that are not that much focusing on national identity, or the people there are not very into their history or etc. But I think it's very unique and it's very individual, but I still think so. And of course, there are always certain factors that create a certain environment or a certain things, indicators, factors that make it possible for certain phenomena to happen. Yeah, so to summarize a little bit, we talked about 2 years of the war in Ukraine, that actually now you know that it's actually not 2 years and not from 2014, but from 16th century. In the middle of 16th century, Now you know that the Kievska Rus is not a descendant of Kievska Rus has nothing to do with Russia, with Russian Empire, with Moscow State, nothing at all. And the nonsensical lies about brotherly the elder brother, whatever. Sorry, I forgot how it was exactly. According to the elder brotherhood. Yeah, I did it. Yes. Elder brotherhood and about three brotherly nations. This is a nonsense. So please be aware. Don't be ignorant. Read a little bit of history or listen to my podcast sometimes. And it's not entirely about history, but sometimes I'm really touching this topics because it's the part of me and we are writing the book here. And I would be really grateful if you listen and really listen, you know, not just hear and forget, but be aware of the history, just the facts, the history, how it was, and that the history that the Russia is imposing on the whole world about that they are descendants of Kievska Rus, or that they have the part in Kievska Rus, or that they have the something to do with Kievska Rus, it's all lies, and they have actually nothing to do with it, because Kievska Rus was formed as a prototype of Ukraine later on, was formed in 882, and Moscow State as a area in the Golden Horde was formed in 1547. Yeah, so how come the elder brother was born so late, you know? Just simple logic and facts, if you do the math and just, you know, yeah. And also we talked about national identity and transgenerational trauma, which I find really important and crucial for any nation. But now I am talking in the context of Ukraine, and I'm happy that now, I'm happy something there are good sides, good aspects of all the terrible things that are happening, that now Ukrainians, they are uniting and they are reconsidering their identity. They are reconsidering, remembering their national identity, and they are building this core of their national identity that later on will become a very very strong power that would lead us to the bright future. Yeah, if you have any suggestions or questions for our program, please let me know. So you can contact me contact me at email, which is beyondandunder@gmail.com. And yeah, and I would be really happy. It was Bohdana Onishchuk, Beyond and Under. Thank you so much. And here, you will hear me as always. I never master my endings. And you will hear me in the next episode. Bye bye.